The following takes place between 6 p.m. and 7 p.m.
Hello, and welcome to Tech Access Weekly, a podcast of unspecified length concerning news and events in accessible technology. This is episode 37 for Tuesday, April 27th, 2010. Bar hopping. We'd like to begin this episode with a very special announcement. Yes, indeedy, folks. It's not Rodney's birthday. It's not my birthday. Last week, it was YouTube's birthday.
I'm more impressed that we could get our voices up that high.
Yeah, me too. How did we do that? Oh, that's right. That was the night we inhaled all that helium.
I thought we always do that. But anyway.
Well, no, not usually. YouTube is 5 years old, or was 5 years old, April 23rd.
Which was last Friday.
And the first video uploaded to YouTube was a 19-second clip of one of its founders at the San Diego Zoo.
Amazing.
Wow.
And to honor this, we found, courtesy of Net at Night on the Twit Network, go figure, Twit Network, that always seems to come up during one of these episodes, they did a intro of YouTube back in October of 2005. Of YouTube, this new innovative website.
Mm-hmm.
And we thought we would play this. It is a clip from the Tech TV Call for Help show that used to be filmed in Toronto, I believe. And this is Leo Laporte and Amber MacArthur.
Welcome back to Call for Help. These days, it's so easy to shoot your own mini movies and home videos. Even Mikey can do it. But what do you do with them after they're all wrapped, huh? Well, the file's probably too big to email, and your dog's already seen it a few times. So Amber's here to show us one of her favorite sites online that lets you upload, tag, and share your video with the rest of the world, or just family and friends if you prefer.
Yes, the site's called YouTube.com, and that's Y-O-U. And it's just a place where you can go, it's kind of like Flickr for videos, if you think of it like that, because you're actually able to tag your videos. Hmm. And what we mean is, you know, assign keywords to your videos.
That's all the rage with Flickr.
Yes, it is.
Why is tagging so popular?
I think it's an easy way for you to categorize the content, as well as an easy way for other people who are interested in that type of content to search for that content. So if you assign tags, if you do your show Twit, if you say it's a technology is one of the tags. It's basically just keywords.
Right.
So then people who search technology, obviously, you know, Twit is something that will come up. So we're going to take a look at YouTube, and just, I absolutely love this site, because I know there's lots of sites out there that allow you to upload videos, but this one is the most user-friendly, and there's a really nice community there. So here we go. This is the homepage of YouTube.com. You can see
it looks like Flickr.
It does look like Flickr. I know they've copied it a little bit, like recently viewed videos, and then you have all the tags along the right-hand side here.
Yeah.
What we'll do is we'll go in. I have actually my favorite videos listed here. And just to show you what the video actually looks like when we play it, we'll just click on this. This is Hack 5 or Hack 0.5.
They have a built-in player?
Yes, they have a built-in player. So we'll click on this. And then so it actually plays right on YouTube. So you don't actually have to go and, you know, download it.
Now, and this is happening right now, video files are giant. So
yes,
they may take a little while. You have to have a fast connection.
Exactly.
I'm Darren in an ice cave in Alaska looking for some Wi-Fi. And you're watching Hack 0.5.
So this is just a video show that a bunch of guys, and actually I think there's a woman as well who's part of the team, have put together. So they've uploaded all their videos there, and I've done the same thing. So it's a really easy thing. You can upload up to 100 megs of video.
So based on that little bit, does it look different than it used to?
The front page and everything looks a little bit different.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot more text on it back then in 2005 than there is now. Now they have video and ads and things like that, because it's been taken over by Google.
Right.
So that's kind of a difference. Back then, I believe the videos pretty much did like they do now. They start instantly once you click on them.
Right.
But it was all Flash.
Mm-hmm.
So accessibility wasn't that great.
Yeah, it's still not that tremendous, but I do think it was worse. I think
their buttons weren't as clearly labeled.
Well, and part of that might just be that screen readers like JAWS and other things weren't quite sure what to do with them.
Right. Well, that was kind of what I was saying. So, moving right along, there is no good segue into this next story, but we're going into our little security segment here at the beginning.
Yes, and as we usually do, which always seems like this time of year,
mm-hmm.
not that we've had this time of year before, but maybe next year we will, there is a report that there is a malware issue with Macintosh computers that will actually allow for hackers to do a sort of a backdoor attack on your Mac, which, I mean, this is one of those things that it always comes up. It's mm-hmm. kind of like cell phones causing cancer. You
right.
know, it's every year, every 6 months or so, there'll mm-hmm. be a report. It's no secret that, yes, Macintosh is actually more secure, so to speak, than PCs, but the only reason that it's more secure is just the fact that, Apple does not have as big of a market share.
Isn't the reason that this works, though, because the virus or malware or whatever is built to attack, like, the processor? So it works with PCs and Macs?
Yeah, there are exploits, but mm-hmm. with PCs, there's been...
No, I mean this particular...
Well, this particular one, there's been software updates for PCs that will stop this particular attack.
Mm-hmm.
But for Macintosh, they haven't until recently started to do security updates.
Mm-hmm.
The more popular Macintosh becomes, the more susceptible it's going to be for virus writers to say, hey,
mm-hmm.
this might actually be profitable. Because
right.
you're really not going to go after a computer company that's only got maybe less than 10% of the market.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can do hundreds of thousands or millions, which would you pick?
Right.
So it is an ugly malware, but most likely the Mac folks will actually repair this at some point, hopefully.
Hopefully soon.
Yes.
Speaking
of virus issues, last week on Thursday, McAfee released a virus update that crippled computers all over the place.
Whoops.
The definitions file that was downloaded for McAfee said that the SVC host in Windows XP was actually a virus. And the way that it handled the virus was it deleted the file. Now, if you delete this file on Windows XP, your computer is going to go into a complete reboot.
So it just keeps rebooting?
It just reboots, starts over, reboots, starts over, because Windows needs that as a critical file. If you ever go into Task Manager on Windows XP or Windows Vista or 7,
I just saw that.
You'll see a SVC host process mm-hmm. running in there, and that's what it is.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of a generic value that you'll see for various processes. This issue affected people all over the world. Governments like places in Australia
mm-hmm.
had to shut down because
computer
systems were down.
Oh, dear.
School systems in Kentucky were noted. Pennsylvania had a couple of hospitals that actually had to shut down.
Mm-hmm.
Their paperwork and processing, they were able to handle like medical care and things like that. But it pretty much crippled people because corporate world likes to use McAfee, which is crap.
How long did it take to bring everything back up? I mean, what did they do?
By noon on Thursday,
mm-hmm.
McAfee had provided an update. Unfortunately, because of the massive amounts
I'm
of
wondering.
Reboots, IT professionals had to go around with either a CD or her floppy disk in order to vaccinate the computer.
Yeah, because, I mean, if it keeps rebooting, then you can't start the update process.
Yeah. So if your computer started rebooting and you haven't been able to fix it yet, it's probably because McAfee is running and it deleted your SVC host and you need a repair.
Mm-hmm.
There's not really an easy way to do it other than external means, unless you actually have your Windows CD and can do a Windows restore, which
wow.
you would need somebody with vision
usually,
to handle that.
Moving right along, another security story, this time about Facebook. Some dude, a scammer, says he has gotten the information, the login information and passwords and things, for one out of every 300 Facebook users and is putting them on sale.
So he has 1.5 million login credentials for Facebook. Now, he's offering to sell these based on how many followers you have or friends. So your login could go anywhere from $25 to $45 each.
So where is he selling them? I couldn't figure that part out.
I guess it's sort of the internet black market, IRC chat, this kind of stuff. I don't figure he's going to eBay.
Probably not.
But you might figure, why in the world are these things valuable? And when you think about it, it has a lot of personal information. It has where you grew up, your high school.
Your gender, your possibly the address, places where you live now, so they can get your...
Exactly.
Find your bank information through that.
Well, not necessarily find your bank information, but they would be able to actually do sort of the Sarah Palin hack and sort of figure out your password cracks based on social networking.
Right.
So,
but they, people were saying that they could potentially be able to log into your bank accounts eventually if they found your address and telephone number and used other methods.
Yeah, because a lot of banks and things, they'll have these security questions. And if you can answer the security questions right, it'll give you access.
Right, exactly.
And a lot of people put factual information like what was their high school, what was their high school mascot, you know, what was their mother's maiden name type of thing. So very valuable stuff and very easy to get. So if you're concerned, you may want to change your password on Facebook and potentially limit how much information you put out there.
Other Facebook news, Facebook has turned off its light, meaning Facebook Light. Last August or September, one of the two, Facebook Light became came out. It is basically a stripped-down version of the main Facebook site, light.facebook.com. A little more feature-rich than the mobile site, but it eliminated a lot of the third-party applications. A lot of the heavy advertising from the main site was also gone. And a lot of people, especially those with visual impairments, actually used it on a regular basis. I know I did. But Facebook decided it was going to turn it off. And they really didn't give a whole lot of explanation. We're wondering if it's because, you know, maybe not a lot of people used it, or maybe they just wanted the revenue that it was potentially taking away from people who use the main site.
Yeah, I'm going to guess it's probably the lack of users actually doing it.
I don't know.
Most visual people are going to use the main site so they get to their games and things. And then if you're on a cell phone, you're going to
use the mobile site.
Exactly. Also, in wonderful world of Facebook land, last week they held the F8 conference, or as some people are calling it, Fate.
Yeah, I've heard other people say that Facebook is now planning to eat the internet.
They announced the social graph, which is a graph of everywhere that you are connected, people, places, things, that kind of thing. They are introducing Facebook Connect, which will allow for other websites to put a widget on their page like CNN or Sports Illustrated or Cooking Light, maybe somewhere like that. They can put a little widget on their page and it will say, oh, well, your friend so-and-so was here and they were looking at this particular article. So a lot of people are probably going to see that as a good thing, but it also means that all these websites are going to be able to possibly get information from you.
Exactly. And Facebook views this information as public information. So it's going to share any public information it has with these other sites, potentially.
Plus, they're going to try and collect information as to what you like. So if you go to Amazon.com and you've already been logged into your Facebook account, Amazon.com can show things as far as what your friends purchased. But then at the same time, you may have a like button that'll appear so that you can say, oh, I like this. I like this Cuisinart mixer.
Right.
You know, so that other people on your Facebook stream can say, oh, I'm going to Facebook and you like the Cuisinart mixer. And just
maybe
so
I
happens,
like one too.
Yeah, I'm just happen to be in the market for one.
Exactly. A lot of people may like this and think this is great, but a lot of other people may not want it. And Facebook already opts you in, so you have to opt out of this, what do they call it, interpersonalization?
Something like that.
Something like that.
you have to go under your security settings mm-hmm. and applications in order to turn off the Facebook Connect.
Right.
Apparently, there is also a external website's link that mm-hmm. I hadn't looked for yet because I haven't accepted the Facebook Connect yet.
Right.
But that will actually limit the amount of information that your friends are able to share about you. Because mm-hmm. just because you turn it off doesn't mean that when your friends go to Amazon that some information about you isn't
exactly
shared. Guesstimates right now are that Facebook wants to be the one-stop shop for everything. Mm-hmm. They want to be the place for selling goods at some point in the future, where instead of going to Amazon, you just go to Facebook and are able
gross.
To select things to purchase. So it's kind of like a lot of times on websites, there'll be like an open ID mm-hmm. or one login type of thing where it'll cover multiple things. I occasionally see it with Google Checkout. If mm-hmm. you've got a Google account and you have Google Checkout, you can log into some websites just because of that account existing.
Right.
So it's kind of created a frenzy, and I believe I even heard on the news earlier this week that a couple of U.S. congressmen are petitioning and creating a committee to investigate this because of security and privacy mm-hmm. situations.
And I heard also that a few Google employees are so upset about it, they have eliminated their Facebook accounts.
I wonder if they kept their Buzz account.
Oh, probably.
Kind of the same thing. I mean,
kind of, but not exactly.
The whole problem with this is the fact that you can't explain it to anyone.
Right.
If you were to call your mother and tell her that you really should probably deactivate Facebook Connect, you might be on the phone for 3 hours trying
right,
to
exactly.
get the point across.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, information is shared all the time, but with this, you really can't get a gauge as to how much is being shared
mm-hmm.
or where it's being shared.
Right.
So, a little bit of a concern.
Another story about Twitter is a little less disturbing. As we mentioned last week, the Library of Congress is archiving tweets from Twitter, putting them all on big servers and sticking them in a building for research purposes.
Why do they care?
First, let's clarify that I believe we said this last week, but we're going to say it again because it's important to know that these are only tweets that are available in the public timeline. So, for instance, direct messages and tweets that are protected, in other words, if your account is protected, are not included in this big archive. The Library of Congress has a lot of people who do research affiliated with it, and they like to research methods of communication and how they change over time. This department has determined that Twitter is one of these big communication-changing methods, and so wants to advertise the tweets for posterity. The library has been working with Twitter on this for a long time, trying to discover, you know, the meets and bounds, the limits on this. And basically, the conditions are that they will be stored on servers in the Library of Congress. They will only be, like I said, publicly available tweets, and they are only available to a certain group of researchers. I guess you have to have certain credentials and maybe have to have keys to the room. I don't know. But they're trying to do everything that they can to protect this. So they want to look at it, as I said, for determining the ways in which people communicate and how that's changed. They're not going to look at it for, you know, what did you have for dinner tomorrow night, but they're looking at it for in a more wider kind of historical context. What kinds of slang did people use? What kinds of things did they talk about on a regular basis?
Maybe how did they use it for communicating disasters?
Exactly. How do they use it for communicating disasters?
Yeah, last week we kind of speculated on what they might,
on what
use,
they
it
might
for,
use it
but
for,
but now they're kind of telling us.
Yeah. It was interesting because also an idea was put out that maybe people would want to do research on their families. In other words, you know, look up their grandmother or something for a project and see what she tweeted about generations down the road. So those were just some of the few things that they talked about this might be used for. It'll be interesting to see in the future if people can even understand them, if they can understand tweet speak, because, you know, it has so many acronyms and emoticons and slang associated with tweeting and texting. Also, they're wondering about URL shorteners. You know, what's going to happen to the URLs in these tweets? Because, well, generations down the line, these URL shorteners probably won't exist. Who knows? The web might not even exist. It's in XML code. I think it's XML coded, so they figure that'll probably stick around. Mm-hmm. Good luck on that one. You know, overall, I guess they'll be pretty comprehensible, but those are a few of the main areas that they wonder if down the road we'll still be able to make out. Yeah, so I thought that was kind of interesting.
Yeah, it should be interesting to see 20 years from now what people think of Twitter, because most likely mm-hmm. it'll be replaced by something else.
Right. I'm thinking of hundreds of years from now.
Oh.
Yeah. That's why I mentioned all that about slang and emoticons.
Well, hopefully they'll get the way to put you into a bottle of goo so that you can find out at that point.
I hope so. I think it's fascinating.
But anyway, Twitter is becoming such a fad
exactly.
that people are actually starting to either make real or fake tattoos based on Twitter.
They've got pictures up. A couple people have made tattoos of the Twitter bird. That's on the Twitter website.
The fail whale that, mm-hmm. If anybody doesn't know, the fail whale comes up when you can't log into Twitter or the servers are down.
Mm-hmm.
It's basically a large whale being lifted up by little birds on strings.
I did not know this.
Yes. And some people have the word Twitter tattooed on their stomachs and even their forehead. Mm-hmm. I don't quite get that.
There were 8 of these tattoos, but those are a couple of the more flamboyant.
Yeah, and then some people have put like little Twitter phrases, you know, like "I love Twitter" and mm-hmm. things like that, or speak that you might see on Twitter on a regular basis.
Right.
So just kind of a strange thing. Kind of fits in the "what were you thinking?" But we decided to stick it here.
Yeah, it's all about Twitter.
Exactly.
Now we move into other news. There is no decent segue into this, other than it is a website, the Blind Bargains site. Has been updated. Specifically, the search capability has expanded to include things in the Apple iTunes store. So you can search for music and books and all sorts of other sundries in the Apple iTunes store, and the results will be integrated into other shopping results that you'll get, like from Amazon or eBay and other retailers. So that's basically the biggest update that they've done.
So are you actually able to buy things from iTunes mm-hmm. on Blind Bargains?
No, you can search for it, though.
Oh.
I don't believe you can purchase, but you can search for
various
things. Yeah.
Blind Bargains is so well of a text-based website that would probably be a good thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Definitely. Another company whose interface is getting a significant update is the SAM Network, the System Access Mobile Network from Saratech. Their email interface specifically is getting a big update. So not only do you have the ability to send and receive email through the SAMNet mailer, which is a web-based client, but you can also connect the interface. You can sort of pop it like you would do Gmail from Google. So you can get your mail, your SAMNet mail, in your email clients like Outlook or Windows Live. So that's a pretty big change. Also, the System Access Mobile Network will allow people to stream content, to sync content with their Bookport Pluses. So not only can you use the Victor Reader Stream, the BookSense, but you can also use the Bookport Plus to sync all of your movies and entertainment and things that you get off the SAM network. The BlackBerry smartphones, as we heard at ATIA, there is a screen reader developed by Humanware and Code Factory. Yes, I mean Atiya.
Okay.
Called Oratio. Dear God. Sorry. It sounds like you should be on
one of those CSI crime shows.
Exactly. It was supposed to be called Orator. So for the longest time, like years, we were thinking Orator, but it was a last minute name change, and I guess they couldn't do any better than Oratio. It is going to come out very soon on the BlackBerry Tour 9630 smartphone with Verizon. There's really not a whole lot of information about this, what its capabilities are. I'm assuming it's probably going to be a lot like mobile speak for Windows smartphones and what it can do. We'll just have to see. I mean, the press release was so new that it had lots of spelling mistakes, so I know it's not the final press release. At least, I hope not.
And it kind of looks like the BlackBerry Curve or something like that. It has like a 3.2 megapixel camera
mm-hmm.
and all your web browsing and things. So if you haven't seen a BlackBerry, it's sort of a phone with a QWERTY keyboard on the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of all in one little unit there, kind of like a Samsung Blackjack or Blackjack 2 like we carry.
Mm-hmm. That we're both getting sick of, slowly but surely. Speaking of...
phones.
Mobile phones.
If you have been under a rock or you don't listen to anything technology but Tech Access Weekly, you haven't heard about the alleged 4G iPhone that was found...
in a bar.
On the floor.
Lost. Just laying there.
On someone's 21st birthday.
Who exactly, we don't know. But someone. It had to be someone's 21st birthday.
Well, actually, the guy, his name has been outed. What apparently happened was a developer for Apple was testing his prototype iPhone 4G and accidentally lost it in a bar. Some guy found it on the floor, supposedly, with air quotes, tried to return it or chase the guy down or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But instead, he took pictures, tried to sell it to Engadget, which is a tech blog. They took a picture of it and posted a picture saying that there was a 4G iPhone allegedly out there. There supposedly was... other pictures circulating, but the biggest issue was Gizmodo. They did a review of it, and they are kind of owned by Gawker, which is like the tabloid TMZ of tech news.
Oh, dear.
And they paid $5,000 for this phone from the guy, and it's kind of blowing up into, okay, are they journalists? Are they not journalists? Mm-hmm. Is this a crime? Because... supposedly in California, it is a crime if you know that a product is stolen or was stolen or is property via theft.
Of someone else, yeah.
So the CEO and president of Gizmodo, he's had his computers seized by police in the last few days.
Mm-hmm.
They've sort of been putting out... articles over the last month, because all of this happened in March.
Right.
So they've sort of been trying to justify themselves as to why they did this, which is primarily for link bait, trying to get people
sure.
there.
Of course.
It's just blowing up like crazy.
Yeah, especially it seems like in the past week, it's just blown up all out of, you know, like a big soap bubble. So this is going to bring the question out in the open that's been floating around for years now. What is the status of bloggers? Should there be different status for different types? The trend seems to be that those who make money are probably considered journalists, and those who do it for a hobby or for personal or business reasons probably wouldn't. But that's just the trend. So I don't know if this is actually going to court. I think I saw it. Something on Twitter, something where Apple was thinking of pressing charges and taking this to, you know, in front of a judge somewhere.
Well, it's an issue of the fact that the 4G iPhone is out there now. Mm-hmm. People in mainstream areas know about it, where usually it's just the tech community buzzing about the rumors and things. But now CBS, ABC, Fox News, all of these different outlets are covering it. So it's going to kind of make the general public say, well, I'm not going to go out and buy an iPhone 3GS because there's going to be a new iPhone coming out in June.
Right.
They would have probably never thought about that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of crippling their market, their product. So a lot of people are seeing it as a crime. The guy that lost the iPhone, he was actually outed on Gizmodo and Gawker with a picture on the front page all this kind of thing. And it's unknown as to whether he's going to be fired or anything. But the unfortunate thing is that his name is always going to be linked on Google to lost iPhone. You know, I mean, it's not a good situation for that guy to be in.
No.
Especially when he's this young and that's pretty much going to be a tattoo.
And I don't know if he knows this or not, but if men have iPhones, they're more likely to get dates than men who don't.
Jeez.
Some study said that anyway. And I say that as a segue into our next story. There was a man who works for Google who proposed to his wife in a very unique way. Well, his fiance, I guess now. We heard about the people who got married over webcam. There was a person who, because of the ashen volcano was stranded in Europe and proposed over webcam recently. But this guy took his wife to a showing of Back to the Future. He took her to a showing of Back to the Future, and there were about 20 or so people in there. And he superimposed himself proposing to her in a scene of that movie. And she was very embarrassed. And then it turned out that he had brought these people in and that this was a staged event.
Yes, he used borrowed movie equipment in order to sort of cover up the Marty McFly character's face and change it to his. And it's in the early stages of the movie. There's a clip out there circulating on Mevio that you can watch. And it's right at the very beginning of the movie. And when they're talking about it's a big step, time travel and all this kind of thing, he looks at the camera and says, well, I can't really do anything about this. And then he just sort of stands there kind of bored, you know, kind of like, okay, is he doing it? What is he doing? You know, he's just kind of awkwardly standing there, like waiting for him to get on his knee and propose.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the end of it, he's kind of like, well, did she say yes? I hope she said yes. Did she? And then it just sort of fades out and she realizes that it's a complete hoax.
Right.
So it's kind of a cute thing, but I don't know.
Kind of a marriage proposal.
Yeah, but that'd have to be somebody at Google that would have connections.
Exactly.
And excess money to be able to rent out a theater and have friends.
Oh, yeah, friends. That's important, too.
But anyway.
What were you thinking?
In our What Are You Thinking, or Were They Thinking, a Oregon man is planning to sell advertisements on his cremation urn. Aaron Jameson in Springfield, Oregon, has been diagnosed with colon cancer, and he has probably 3 to 9 months to live. So he's decided to subsidize his funeral cost by selling ads. This is bizarre.
This is really creepy. So they're going to be printed on his urn when he's dead? I mean, they'll put his ashes in this urn with advertisements all over it?
I guess so. That's kind of that is kind of the idea, I believe.
So do we know if anyone has purchased ad space?
Not at this time.
I've heard of innovative advertising ideas, though, but that's just sort of pointless. It's not like it's going to be in the public eye, you know, for everyone to see. Ashes in an urn, it's a very private thing. Somebody's probably going to have it on their mantelpiece somewhere, or it's going to be stuck in a crematorium, or, no, there's another word for that. Wherever they put...
Mausoleum or something?
No.
No?
I used to go to a church that had one of these dumb things, and I can't think of a name for it. You put urns in it.
The urn bunker?
Something like that. Hmm. But it's like a burial ground for urns. Oh, I can't remember it. Anyway,
Maybe he's going to make arrangements with the funeral home so that they can have it on display.
Columbarium. That's what it is. Took me a second there.
Isn't that a high school?
No,
that was Columbine.
That's Columbine.
My bad.
I think it's Columbarium. Something like that. Anyways, I'll find out at some future date.
Folks, you see what I have to put up with?
Exactly.
Just pull
I do
big
this,
words out.
I do this all nowhere. The time, and then I wonder if they're the right words, and so I obsess over it. Anyway, my point is, an urn is a very private possession and will probably be put in a very private place. So who's going to spread the words about the advertising? How is it going to benefit anybody except something stupid?
I have no idea. Maybe Microsoft will hear about it and put Bing on it, just like they did with WNBA jerseys.
Mm-hmm. But the point of an advertisement is to get people to go do or buy something. And if this is in some person's living room, who's really going to act on it?
Well, I don't know. Maybe he's got a lot of Facebook friends or something, and they're going to have like this massive funeral, and he's going to have like 1,000 people there. That 1,000 people might be valuable. I have no idea. I'm grasping.
Yeah, you're really, really grasping there. And on that note, before this goes any further, I think we should shut down production.
Why, yes. That would be a good idea. But first, before we do that, we would also like for our wonderful, loyal listeners to help us out.
If we still have any after this.
Yes, very much so. We would appreciate it greatly if you would go to our website, techaccessweekly.com, and complete our listener survey as we try to learn more about you and what we can do to make this production better. And if you put need new host or something like that, we probably won't listen because we're hard-headed.
Right. But we'll definitely know that we need to do something to improve a little bit.
But we do slowly see followers and subscribers going up and down a little bit. Yeah. So if you please spread the word about our podcast, we'd appreciate it.
And we're global now. Yay.
Yes, we're being downloaded by people in 5 or 6 different countries now.
So we'd appreciate it if you'd fill that out. Also, if you want to look at these stories that we considered for this episode, you can go to delicious.com/techaccess/37.
And you can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/TA_weekly.
Thank you very much for your listening.
Your comments and suggestions are welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye.
To contact the team for Tech Access Weekly, send an email to techaccessweekly@gmail.com. Or you may leave a voice message at 260-2-ASK-TAW, 260-227-5829. Please visit our website at techaccessweekly.com.